You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC, located on the unceded traditional Coast Salish territory of the Musqueam people. Hello, and welcome to Intersections, presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective. This radio show is presented every 4 weeks, where we dig into topics about gender, race, and social justice. We open our show with a conversation between your hosts, followed by an interview with an expert on the topic that we will be discussing.
Hello, everyone. My name is Anastasia.
And my name is Peyton.
And for this episode, we are going to be talking about gender jobs. And we're going to start off with a discussion between the two of us. So when we were thinking of this topic, we thought about a lot of different things, but we also thought about messages growing up. So Peyton, what kind of messages do you think you got growing up about, you know, what you were expected to do?
When I started thinking about the idea of gendered jobs, I basically just started thinking about how once I entered into like teenagehood and like tweenhood, how my thoughts and ambitions kind of warped, or at least not even warped. It's just like, I think I kind of forgot about the stuff that I was originally like passionate about and interested in once I got to that age, because I was so bombarded with messages that were all about like appearance. It almost seems as if all this like passion for reading and school and academic stuff that I have when I was like 8 to 10, as soon as it got to like teenage age, I got so absorbed in like all of these like super misogynistic messaging about trying to be pretty and desirable and attractive. And I think that really like threw me off track right up until I was like pretty much an adult. And I was like, hey, like all this stuff that I used to enjoy, like, why did I get so derailed away from it? I don't know if you had a similar experience, but yeah.
Yeah, like, well, I just want to say also that I watched a documentary quite a while ago, actually, but it just kind of sparked in my head that, like, you are definitely not alone with that. It's a statistic that girls after the age of, like, elementary school, the equality between, you know, what kind of jobs they want to do, like STEM jobs and, like, you know, jobs being a doctor and so, and things like that, the rates for women, like for girls, go way down when they reach middle school and high school. So it's like a wide known thing. And I think it also, in the documentary, it did say also if you're Black, that also it's a higher rate. Maybe something, I'm not sure why, maybe to do with the messaging, like the sexist messaging for unracist messaging. I feel like, yeah, I definitely remember, honestly, just being, I do feel like my dreams were kind of dashed a little. Like, remember I was really into soccer, and then even though I loved playing soccer, I remember that like guys that I knew like in my classes were like, oh, do you really love soccer? Do you know these players? And when I played with them, they wouldn't really give me the same respect. They wouldn't defend me as much. Like, I could tell, like, and I feel like I was like, oh, well, they don't take me seriously, so why would I take me seriously? You know, I remember that.
I feel like now we could even shift into the fact that when you're an adult woman, you're pretty much still faced with so much. I think we should kind of touch on what you were talking about, which is kind of like the hypocrisy in the way that like men and women are treated once they actually do get to the workplace. Do you just want to like elaborate on like what your thoughts were on that?
Yeah. So, I was thinking a lot more about moms and dads specifically, because, you know, I feel like it's been paid more attention to, but I do like this. I think this one comedian said is that like, oh, like, female actresses or, you know, popular figures are asked in interviews a lot, oh, how do you balance being a mom and your work life? And the answer is you don't. And that's only horrible when it's a woman. Because do you expect anyone to have pure balance in their lives? Like, That is the one thing in life we're searching the most for. But women at any age are supposed to have it right away. But like, if a man comes home late from work, he's providing for his family. It's okay. And also, just what makes a great dad and what makes a great mom are so different, because you could be a terrible mom in just a second. You know, if you forget your kid somewhere and you come right back, you know, you're terrible. But then if you're a dad, you're like, oh, he's over, you know, like you take one day off sick and, or you take one day off from work to take care of your kid and you're a hero. But if a mom does that, she's slacking. So yeah, I think there's a lot to do with moms and dads. And then especially in the US, but still in a lot of other places, you know, the maternity leave and paternity leave, like it's really horrible. And the fact that, you know, just the things that are being put on women's shoulders are, you know, really out of their control. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about, I don't know, those relationships in the workplace?
I think it's definitely true. And yeah, I think when we're talking about women who are in male dominated industries in particular, I think it's probably super frustrating for them, in the sense that we already have women who are in more female leaning jobs, like teachers or nurses or whatever. I feel like that already is such a hard balance to strike if you're a parent to begin with, but you're just so like expected to be like delivering 100% on like both levels. Whereas a man is more expected to go to work, and then his work and home life are, the responsibility is supposed to be entirely skewed pretty much on the work, and they shouldn't have to worry too much about the home. Whereas women, it's always supposed to be, if you're in those situations, you should be excelling 100% in both. And I think that if you're a woman, particularly working in a male-dominated industry, that would be even worse, because I feel like you would almost be like fighting two battles at once, in the sense where you're trying to work extra hard to feel legitimacy when you're at work, and working extra hard against all of these like forces that are working against you. And then not only that, you're coming home to a household where you're also expected to be giving 100% when you're working a super maybe intense job. And it's just, I think it's pretty clear that the expectations aren't like evenly split between the two genders. Like, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like it's a super frustrating position to be in.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like, and also there's, and I hate how some, I mean, like, I've had this growing up too, where like my guy friends have gaslit me about things that I think is something against women. Like, they're like, well, they could just, you know, leave, or they could just tell someone. But there's a lot of unwritten rules in a workplace, which anybody who's worked anywhere knows. Mm-hmm. You know, if someone's harassing you at work, if you don't have the right, if you don't have a good boss, they'll find you difficult if you complain. Mm-hmm. You won't be uplifted. It's not, yeah, like women aren't being, it's still not a place to uplift women. And I feel like just, you know, and yeah, I really hate the gaslighting of it all. And and I mentioned this in Google, they give their women, the women that work in the workplace are allowed to freeze their eggs so that they don't have to make the choice. Because if you decide to get pregnant or not, if already hiring a woman in a workplace comes with this, like, oh, will she want to get pregnant? And if it mm-hmm. seems like she's around the age where she would, you might not get hired. So mm-hmm. Google decided to freeze their eggs. And I remember mentioning it to a group and they were all shocked. And part of me felt like, is it that shocking? Like, isn't this just giving women choice? And then they go, oh, well, that choice could be abused. They could be forcing these women to do this. But women are either way being forced to do something they don't want to do when they join an establishment, mm-hmm. when they work anywhere. So I feel like, I don't know. I was just thinking, I don't think it's that controversial a subject in a way, because yeah. it's just, because either way, it's an issue where there's unwritten rules, and yeah, and women are forced to make a decision either some way.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. So sorry, when they're like forced to like freeze their eggs, is that just like to give them like the option to get pregnant like later on?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. But they're not forced to do it. It's an option. Yeah. But when I remember bringing this up to somebody, to a group of people, they're like, they were like, oh, well, that could be bad because they could be, their bosses could start forcing them to freeze their eggs. I'm like, yeah, but their bosses also like imply that you'll be fired if you want to be a mom, or that like you know, or that you might be fired after.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. Yeah, I just think it's a, yeah, it's so weird that when you're a woman, that's something even that has to be factored into your workplace. Like the idea that women at all have to disclose whether or not they want to have kids, or like, or if it's implied that they need to disclose whether or not they want to have kids, like, so insane to me. And I think it just goes to show the ways that like women's bodies are like treated differently in labor scenarios. And I think it, yeah, I think it just comes back to like a weird capitalism thing where it's, you're really just a tool to like act out that work. And women's bodies, I feel like, just for, like, the idea that you having a child might damage your contribution to productivity and to therefore money is, yeah, super creepy. And but it's pretty much always been a factor, and it's something that I don't even really think about since I'm not at the age where I would be like thinking about having kids. But I guess it's going to be something that will be a factor in the future, which is wild to think about.
Yeah, like it's something I never want to be asked, but I've like heard of other people being asked, like, oh, do you think you're gonna have kids? Or, oh, how are you and your husband doing? Mm-hmm. How are you in your stage of life? And where it's like a subtle like pressuring to answer so that they know. And and I also feel like it's a distrust of women to be able to handle their own business in a way that, like, I was like, do you have pregnant, like, you know, maybe their husband would stay home, but the thing is, but then again, our businesses are set up, it doesn't give men as much of a break to take care of kids. So unfortunately, sometimes I'm like, in a way I do get the company. I hate it, but like in this capitalist world, everyone is, you know, we're tools.
Yeah.
And so this natural thing that keeps the planet, of, you know, our humanity alive is just a burden for them. Yeah,
since we're talking about Google, I wanted to touch on this podcast episode that I was listening to the other day that I mentioned before, that was essentially, I think it's just a really good example of how, or it's a good example of the impact of male-dominated workspaces and how it actually sort of impacts the world that we live in when we have these industries that are pretty much entirely populated by white men. So it was talking about tech companies, particularly like the development of artificial intelligence, AI technology, and the episode pretty much went through how through the development of AI throughout the entire process, since it was only developed by white men, the technologies that are literally present today are super racist and sexist as well. Like, there's a bunch of examples of this. It was a huge deal when it came to you know, Apple's Face ID technology. In a lot of Asian countries, there was examples of like entire offices of Asian women being able to unlock each other's phones, just because in the offices, they only ever tested the product on like white male faces. It's a huge aspect in policing. Now that they've developed police like programs that are pretty much designed to heighten arrests, which happen to target low income areas that are highly populated by people of color, and it's sort of just like such a good example to me of the fact that, like, not only should women be in the workplace just as a means to, like, you know, sorry, I'm not articulating myself well. Not only should women like be in the workplace just because it's equality and it just is like a natural thing that like seems right, but like they should be in the workplace because it really makes it better for everyone. Like, the world is better when we have the included opinions of women, minorities, trans people, queer people, people of color, like it, because it shapes our world. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's been shown to make businesses better because you have different inputs. So you can, like, even just from a business standpoint, like, just include everyone, because who are you trying to market to? Why would you just try to be marketing to white people when you could get everyone if you just have everyone on your staff? So even from a, like, a heartless capitalist mindset, it's still useful to have everyone. And yeah, because it feels right. And about like testing, yeah, like that happens with surgeries too. They only test a certain surgical technique or drugs a lot of the time on white people, specifically white men. There's a instance with a surgery where they just tested on white men. And then unfortunately, someone who was black did die because of this, because yeah, different races respond differently to different medications, to different operations. And it's especially like white college students get picked a lot for drug testing. And that's like, like, what could be more important than that? Like, literally life-saving techniques, and it's only white people involved.
Yeah. I just think it's interesting because I feel like there's like a lot of like pushback against the idea of representation politics lately, which obviously to a certain extent I do agree with. You can't solve everything by representation. Like, that's not how it works. But there is something to be said for the fact that, like, if certain groups aren't present when these giant decisions are being made in society, and when technology that's going to like shape our world is formed, it's going to have an impact on the world we live in pretty much always in a negative way, because we don't live in a world that is like homogenous. We live in a world where everyone is different, and that needs to be taken into consideration, I feel like, when these big decisions are being made. And yeah, I feel like that's why we really need to focus on stopping this culture that disencourages young girls and young people of color from pursuing the stuff that is actually of interest to them. Because I feel like by the time they're getting to the age where it comes for them to make those decisions of what they want to do with their life, they've already just been like swamped with all these messages that tell them to only go down one specific path. And it's really disheartening and not good for society.
Yeah, it definitely isn't. And there's already so many other roadblocks, especially if you live in a poor neighborhood or town, because there's so many, like, I remember this young girl wanted to become a doctor, and she did all the classes in her, her high school that she could, and she came to university and immediately failed because she hadn't learned one of the, like, basic math things, because it just wasn't given to her. So there's already these, like, limitations, and then on top of that, it's, like, all of our media telling, and adults, I luckily haven't had an adult, like, you know, as a child, like, kind of say something horrible to me, but I know lots of people who have, and I think that's really sad that I know that many people who've had an instance where someone has just brought them down. And we are actually coming to the end of our episode of this discussion segment, but I really enjoyed talking to you, Peyton, and I hope all the young women and girls and minorities out there, they can, you know, find love for themselves.
Yeah, no, that is definitely something that should happen. Kind of a, it's a big issue to solve, and it's one that you have to sort of solve from the root, which is obviously going to be challenging, but I feel like having discussions about it is a pretty good first step to getting there.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
feeling lost in the lonely, meaningless cyber web? Looking to connect with other users? Then plug in to a CITR collective. Meet users who are compatible with your interests and passions. CITR's mainframe offers 9 unique collectives: news, arts, accessibility, sports, persons of color, indigenous, gender empowerment, LGBTQ2SIA+, and music affairs. CITR collectives are where you can make great radio, great friends, and avoid the abject loneliness of life in the cyber void.
So thank you, Olivia, for being here on Intersections. So to just start off our interview, can you just tell us a bit about yourself? So what your education is in, your current career that you're working, and then how long you've worked in that field for?
Yeah, so yes, my name is Olivia Shinyevich, and I started my, I guess, professional career by attending the University of Alberta. I started in, I think, 2004. I pursued a career in mechanical engineering. I did the four-year program there and graduated in 2009 with a degree, bachelor degree of science in mechanical engineering. Shortly after that, I was offered a role as an engineer with Alberta Agriculture and Forestry in Lethbridge, Alberta, which was a great option for me. I at the time wanted to avoid kind of working for the big oil industry up north, and that was where a lot of my colleagues had gone. So it was a nice opportunity to work in more energy conservation and energy analysis, and that's what I was offered at Alberta Agriculture in Lethbridge, which was a great career path for me. I spent just over 10 years there, and I learned a lot, and that's actually where I became also a professional engineer. So after I graduated from engineering, you're an engineer in training for a period of time. After a number of years, you can apply as a professional engineer. So I achieved that, I think, in 2013-14, and since then I've been working as a professional engineer. And then more recently, I guess, I accepted a position with Fortis BC. I'll be located out in Kelowna. I'll be an energy conservation advisor. So it's a very similar role in a lot of ways, a lot more customer service based, which I'm looking forward to talking to different customers, different clients. Just started a week and a half ago. So very new to me, but so far it's been very welcoming and the job's interesting, and I'm looking forward to the next chapter.
Nice. That's really interesting. Okay. Well, we'll move into kind of our first question about your experience. So what was your experience like when you were at U of A taking mechanical engineering? Have you seen any positive changes like since you've been there that you've noticed that have kind of helped people in the program?
My experience was really good. One thing I didn't mention, I did take my first year at Grant MacEwan, so MacEwan University now, which actually allowed me to create a really strong, small group of people that I went through all the way to the end. I had a really great study group. I met really great people and really diverse backgrounds. We had in our little study group, I had, young students who had, not even turned 17 yet, in some cases, doing engineering, all the way to somebody that had a previous career for a decade and decided to change that. And we even had a couple people that were starting families, right? So really diverse. Once we transitioned to the U of A, so we did the U of A for 3 years after the first year in Grant MacEwan. It was a little different atmosphere. It was a lot bigger school. As far as like my classes and everything, there was a very distinct, because first year is very general. So everybody does the same program. And then second year, all the way to the fourth year, you choose your area of study. So once I chose mechanical, I did notice from day one, basically in my classes. I was often, you know, in a lecture hall of, you know, up to 100 people, and I was maybe one of 6 or one of 10 women, right? So so there was that very visibly noticeable difference. You know, we were all there for one reason, though, like we were there to learn and study. And so that was really, really the purpose. And that's what brought us together. For the most part, it was a very, very positive experience. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. And then just kind of transitioning, how would you describe your experience working as a woman in the field of engineer, both at AgTech and then I guess your new job has only been about a year or a week. But how would you describe that experience?
Yeah. So again, like, I mean, you doing 4 years or 3 years at the U of A in a very kind of male dominated role, you do hear of stories, right? So I got close to a few mentors, a few female mentors, right? So they kind of prepare you a little bit, right? Like I had heard stories, it's changed a lot, but I had heard stories of, you know, be careful when you go to job interviews, you know, they're gonna, you know, consciously or even unconsciously judge you based on your gender, based on your age. Like they might look at you and say like, hey, we're a small company, we really need an engineer. She might go out on parental leave for a year, right? That would be detrimental to our company, right? So like those types of kind of, you know, things are always in the back of your mind. And it was always based on conversations I had with other women, right? It's like they would kind of warn me. I had one mentor, she's an engineer in Edmonton, and she's near the end of her career as well. Like she's probably going to retire in the next few years. And I still keep in touch with her. And her stories were always very interesting. She once sat in an interview as a young engineer and looked at, was told like just face-to-face saying, you know, the interviewer told her, oh, both you and I know a woman can't do this job, you know, like those types of like, but again, this was, you know, decades ago, right? So I don't think that the world's like that anymore. I hope it's not like that anymore. That hasn't been my experience. But just based on, you know, the mentors I had in that generation, you're always conscious to it, right? Moving into an agricultural role in Southern Alberta, there was a lot of learnings for me. And they were, just normal learnings that you would go through as a young engineer. And they were, and I think they were, I would hope they were similar to, you know, regardless of who I was, people would in my situation be going through these learnings. The only couple of things that stand out is just cultural differences, and you have to be respectful of those. Like, for instance, a Hutterite colony will have gender-specific roles, and that's the way they choose to live there in their communities, and you just have to be respectful of that. And I found them always very welcoming, very willing to work with us. But then you also have to be respectful that, you know, maybe if you were invited for a meal, you might have to, you know, eat with the women, not with the men that you're working with, right? So, you know, those types of things are kind of, you know, work both ways, right? It's like you have to respect where they're coming from, and that mutual respect comes with that. So,
no, that's definitely. I just had a friend who recently started a job in agriculture, but in the banking side of it, and she's already told me quite a bit of stories, and it's very similar. She has some mentors, some female mentors that are getting towards the end of their careers. And again, like their stories and their advice. And I think we notice that a lot. That's how women and other minorities coming into these jobs kind of learn about like what to be aware of is by talking to these older employees who have more experience. So,
And very valuable stories to learn. Like they, it's recent history, right? And it does come from, yeah, different biases that people might have, but also like it's a really tough, like I was faced with that very recently. I was unemployed and I was pregnant, and this was before the pandemic hit and nobody knew that was coming, but what do? You're pregnant, you know, you're gonna be taking some time off, but you're also unemployed. So do you look for a job? If you start a job, you know, there's rules around, you know, what your supposed to say or what you can not disclose at the beginning, right? It's like there's certain labor laws, but at the same time, there's also, you know, this aspect of respect, right? It's like if I'm, for instance, like I mentioned before, interviewing for a small company, they might only have one or two engineers that they rely on. Like, is it fair for me to come there and accept a job without disclosing I'm pregnant and then leave for a year? Like, I don't know the answers to those questions, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like it's unfair. Like, you know, maybe I could work with my partner and have him stay home for most of it, right? It's like, it's that kind of different dynamic that we're in right now that, you know, we have to show that mutual respect, because those biases come from, like, some of them, a lot of them are not founded, obviously, but like some of them, like, yeah, I could leave for a year and it could be detrimental to them, right? What are they going to do, right? So it's a tough area to navigate. In the end, I chose actually to stop looking for work just because I didn't want to be in that position. I didn't want to start a new job, work for 2 months and then leave for a year, right? And I knew I wanted to leave for the entire year. That was our choice, right? So in the end, I chose it that, you know what, it's not something I want to do. And it's not even fair to my career, right? It's like to mm-hmm. train for a job and then you come back after a year, you have to almost train again, right? So, right. So yeah, both ways, it was an interesting time, but it all worked out in the end.
Yeah, well, that's very good.
Yeah.
So just speaking about like the engineering field industry, have you noticed any like specific changes, like since you graduated being in the industry, that's benefited like women, minorities coming into this industry to feel more comfortable? And like, such as like, I know a lot of companies start to do like bias training, anything like that you've noticed?
I mean, like working in government for 10 years, you know, they try to stay on top of this. They try to, you know, offer the right training, offer the right, you know, work environment to promote that kind of, you know, inclusive culture. So that was always really good. And now working for Fortis, I mean, it's only been a week and a half, but I get the same feel. They're very inclusive, very like the trainings offered are you know great, and they actually encourage you to look for that kind of stuff. So so far it's been really good. Kind of back to your question, if I've noticed any changes, yes and no. Like I've noticed like my career has been pretty good. There were some things early on that were a little discouraging, just based on like I mentioned, the U of A was a great program, and I don't want to take away from that, but there were, this was just over 10 years ago, so not that long ago, but there were certain areas that I felt like for instance, this is just a funny story, well, funny, it was quite impactful, and I still sometimes think about it. I was in a lab one day, we were annealing metal, so like we were taking a piece of tiny metal with long tongs and oven mitts out of an oven, and we're dropping it in water, right? And we're testing the qualities of this metal after it's gone through this process, right? And the lab instructor, you know, was asking for volunteers to do this, and everybody was, first thing in the morning, everybody's tired, wasn't having any of it, just kind of like, yeah, whatever, right? So I'm like, okay, you know, I'll do it, right? And he looks at me and says, no, I want a guy to do it, this is much too dangerous. And like, you think about it, you're like, well, you're telling a woman that it's much too dangerous to take a piece of metal out of an oven. Like,
yeah,
like, it's just the irony of it right there. Like, you know, so, and I don't think he meant anything. Like, I think he was trying to be actually almost nice about it. Right. Like saying like, oh no, it's a tough job. Like let the guy do it. Right. It's like, and I mean, that one, obviously I did address it with him at the time and told him how, you know, that's not really appropriate, especially in front of my, you know, classmates to say something like that.
Oh, it's, for sure. Yeah.
Everybody was kind of taken aback, and the university did actually get on it, and they offered him some, you know, training to like, and again, I don't think his intent was bad. I think he was trying to be, you know, polite, mm-hmm. and you know, he did have some cultural differences like from his background, right? So it's, you know, it's those types of little things that people don't think about, and then moving forward through the years you see them again and again, and they're little, right? But they kind of just stick with you, like something like, yeah. You know, like I'm strong, I can go and pick up that battery over there, right? And if I felt I couldn't, or I you know needed help with it, I would ask, right? But you know, it's natural and normal for somebody to go and help you with that, right? But because of some of my experiences, you kind of sometimes wonder, like, oh, you know, would they have been doing the same thing if I was a guy, right?
Exactly.
But is it that a big deal? Like, you know, it's maybe not, right? But like, sometimes it could be. Sometimes you could feel like, you know, they think you can't do your job, right? Like those types of things, right? So it's a very kind of weird, like, and but it's changed. It's really become a little bit more. And I don't know if it's changed or if I've changed. And I think I've just become a little bit more open to it. Like, you know, if someone offers help and I know I can do it, you know, I'll be like, no, I'm good, I got it, you know, like, or if I know I can't, and there's like, you know, two strong guys sitting beside me, why not? Like, it's really heavy. Maybe I, you know, have a bad shoulder that day or something, like, why not ask for help, right? And it's just, I mean, it's a little silly, things like, I mean, they're silly, but like, they're, you know, you just become a little bit more like upfront about it, right? It's like, this is what I can do, this is what I can't do, right? And I don't think at that point it's anything to do with gender or roles or anything. It's just like, yeah, you're stronger, just do it. but like, you know, as far as my job goes, like, this is part of my job, I was hired to do it, I can do it, like, you know. So you have to set those boundaries sometimes too, right? So
boundaries, communication, and also just like over time knowing and asserting yourself to say, no, I can do this. So just to wrap up quickly, just one final question. Do you have any advice for women, other minorities, people, and just in general, people coming into the engineering industry right now?
I think my biggest, I guess, point is that it's really, like, the area I'm in is 99.9% like, just very inclusive, you know, very welcoming. You're all there for the same reason. You enjoy doing, you know, applied math and science. That's your passion, like, starting off. And then you find your passion within, right? So you find your passions within those areas, like, where you want to go, what do you want to do? And that's what everybody's there for, right? Like, it's easy to go into class and be overwhelmed when you're one or three or six of hundreds of men, right? It's like, it is, like, it's, but if you just look at it in a way that, like, we're all here for the same reason, right? It's like, we all have similar interests, similar passions, right? And then going through that with your entire career, like, you know, it becomes like, find people with similar likes, similar interests, like, even outside of, you know, engineering, like, you know, different professions, different people in your work environment, like, you know, make those connections, because that's the most powerful thing. And I mean, in any, like, in any place, you'll find something that's not quite right. And I guess my message there is don't be quiet about it. It's like, when that happened to me at the university with the medal out of an oven, ironically, I did address it. I took it, you know, I first took it to the teacher. I wasn't satisfied with his answer. And I took it to the dean and said, listen, like, this isn't a big deal, but, you know, it could be, right? Like, he, you know, maybe his intent wasn't poor, but I mean, he prevented me from doing a lab that I paid for to do, right? Like, so yeah, and they took it very seriously. And so don't be quiet about it. Go to the right people, go through the right avenues and address it. And in the end, you're both better off for it. Because again, his intent wasn't bad, but now he knows, you know, that's not maybe the right thing to do, right? So stand up in those situations. And I hope maybe I inspired another engineer to come our way. So
hopefully. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to be on our radio show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Join us every other Wednesday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. for Sam Squanch's Hideaway with your host, Anita B., as she plays all Canadian music with a focus on indie rock and pop.
So I'm really excited to be joined today by Lexi Redman. We met a few years ago, actually, when we were both working as site crew as an outdoor winter festival here in Vancouver. And I remember talking to you, Lexi, and just being really enamored in your background and your work history. So thank you so much for joining us here at Intersections, where we're going to be talking about gender jobs. Before we kick off, Lexi, can you tell me a bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. We're the OG, so not to set the interview off on an interesting note, but my name is Lexi. My tagline is I'm an actor, former model, and current electrician, and that is still true. I grew up really young, acting and modeling my whole life, and then when I got back from modeling in Milan, I really wanted to find a job where I could use my hands. And I always kind of like being a little bit going against expectations, I guess, is like the little rebel in me. So I joined a Women in Trades program. I learned about plumbing, automotive, electrical, carpentry, all that stuff that I got to try. And by the time we got to electrical, it was like a literal light bulb went off and I wanted to continue doing that. So I took my classes, I got a job, and then here we are today.
Awesome. So your background's acting, modeling, turned, trained all types of trades, and then landing on electrician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then in between there, I also did a little bit of work in the film industry doing lighting. Turns out being an electrician and being a lighting op are very different and not at all easy to transition into, but it was still a really cool experience to, I have my hands in a lot of different pots.
Awesome. And is it right now that you're, so you're still doing acting as well as electricianing?
It's so funny how many people say electricianing and I'm like, it should be a word. So funnily enough, I'm actually off work right now just for an injury, but I'm going to LA next week to go to my movie premiere, which sounds ridiculous. We filmed it 3 years ago and it was supposed to come out in January in 2020, but obviously this weird thing happened and didn't get to do that. So now it's being released. So yeah, it's funny. I was for the last year, in electrical mode. And then now that I've taken time off, it's like all the acting and that kind of world has crashed in on me again. So it's been really interesting. It's never a dull moment.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's super fascinating. So what has been your experience in your job as a woman? It'd be interesting really to hear about your experience, like both in the electrical side and in the acting side.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting because maybe it's just the timing and times have changed, but I will say, working as an electrician as a woman versus being a model actor, I've definitely experienced more harmful scenarios being a model actor than I have as an electrician. I've actually had very positive experiences for the most part. Obviously things happen in the electrical world, but in the model acting world, it's been actually a lot more discriminatory in that field, which I was not really expecting, but it kind of gave me tough skin so that when I did become an electrician, I was like ready, and then everyone was lovely for the most part. So it was kind of, it's interesting.
That's super interesting. So do you think that there is like some discrimination against women in the electrical side, and maybe you're just so kind of like seasoned now, or do you think that there's kind of this perception that women in trades would have kind of some bias against them, but it's not really there?
I mean, that's a really good question. And I will say, like, I obviously have straight passing and white privilege. Like, that is a big component of it. My experience as a woman is not going to be reflective of everyone's experience. And like I said, there has been pretty overwhelmingly positive experiences, but that's not to say the negative experiences or discrimination I have experienced has not added up in like microaggressive ways. So for example, it took me probably 4 months to get a job when I first got out of school, where my male school classmates had been getting jobs like left, right, and center. And it took me a really long time. And in my interview for my very first job that I got in the electrical field, I was interviewed by the owner of the company, and he point blank said, "We don't hire women. We've hired two women in the past before, and they both didn't work out. And so therefore, you're out." So, I mean, I did get the job. He's like, "I guess I'll take a chance on you, but I'm not giving you a hard hat because I don't think you'll last." And then I ended up, you know, being one of his best apprentices, and he hired like eight women after me. But I just imagine there's so many more people that also have experienced that. And it seems like we have to be representatives of our gender and prove that our gender is worthy. And then after that, it gets easier for others. But I'm sure there's people before me as well that had to experience that to pave the way for me to be in the trades.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting, like you say, we said the interviewer said about they've had two before, whereas how many men would they have had that also didn't work out?
Right. And yeah. Like later on, I heard that they just moved, like that they weren't even bad employees. They just moved, you know?
So what was your experience like when you're learning the skills of being an electrician? You said you went to a school of trades. Is that kind of like an apprenticeship?
Yeah. So I am currently an apprentice. I'm a third year apprentice, and most trades, depending on the various factors, but usually you need like a foundations program to get hired into an apprenticeship. Some people will take you green. But in my case, even though I knew some people in the field, they said, do a foundations course first. And even in the women in trades course, I think I'm lucky that my dad, when I was growing up, kind of worked with me with tools, and like, I was a bit of a tomboy, so I had that experience. And I found, like, even though I had limited tool knowledge, my knowledge, the bare minimum, was still so much more ahead than a lot of the women in the course. Like, they just hadn't been exposed to it. Maybe like their parents didn't teach them or just didn't take those classes in school. So I was lucky to have a little bit of experience previously, but it kind of opened my eyes to the fact that, like, sometimes growing up, you're treated differently, and you know, your dad might not pull you off to help fix the car, he might pull your brother. And so there's just like that very base level knowledge gap, I would say, that's still probably prevalent now.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting in that, like, from when we're very young, like, the opportunities that we're given based on our gender as well. So yeah, if, like you're saying, it's unusual based on your experiences, it sounds like you're saying it's unusual based on your experiences of seeing other women going through the training, that they just, like, this wasn't part of their life, and so they just
and that's the great thing about having women in trades programs, is because it's extremely intimidating to walk into a classroom and be the only woman, or be one of two, or, you know, in my class, I luckily had four, so it was like pretty high numbers. But to walk in and not have that kind of base level, or at least the expectation that you'll understand, like certain things like hand tools and just basic kind of knowledge. And I think that's the same in working, is I've had experiences where someone of the equal experience with me, they might not know what they're doing, but they'll just not say anything and do it and figure it out. Whereas for me, I think women in general tend to ask more questions, just because we maybe have a little bit of self-consciousness or just want to make sure we're doing things right. So we ask more questions, so we seem like we don't know as much as guys, but maybe they don't know, they just don't say anything.
Well, you do hear that people say that, and this is a general statement, that, like, often males, when you're applying, they'll apply for a job, but they don't necessarily meet all the criteria of a job requirement, a job specification. But women wouldn't as much. Generally, they'll make sure that they want to make sure they can do all of their job requirements. And so, yeah, they kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of goes to show, like, the gender pay gap is kind of, that's probably a contributing factor. And I've seen it with my colleagues. I was talking to someone today who had no tickets, no training, yet was doing these high level jobs that I would never even consider applying to. I wouldn't feel comfortable because I don't have that knowledge base. Even though they didn't have the knowledge base either, they still were able to get these positions just because they wanted them. And, like, that concept was just foreign to me.
And are these people of, like, equal qualifications of you? They say, like, are earning more?
Yeah, I mean, this was a really specific scenario where I was talking with another electrician who didn't have his Red Seal ticket, went and wrote, didn't get his specialized ticket, but still was doing specialized jobs. And I was offered that position a couple years ago, the same exact position. And I said no, because I wasn't comfortable doing something so outside of my skill set, yet this guy was able to do it kind of seamlessly, which is just, I just found it interesting, the mindset, the confidence that I wanted to have all the facts and all the information and all the knowledge first, whereas it seemed like maybe it's generalizing, but men sometimes will figure it out as they go.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's something similar to what you're saying about learning, like being exposed to the skills when you're younger, where maybe mm-hmm. that's something that just males are encouraged to do. I mean, I can't speak for it. I don't identify mm-hmm. as female. Yeah. So yeah, maybe that's another skill that they just pushed, a difference in how we push towards applying for things.
Yeah, I mean, I heard this really interesting story of someone who had a baby and the baby wore gender neutral clothes. And when people outside thought the baby was a boy, they would say things like, oh, how strong you are, look how fast you are, you're so smart. And then when they assumed the baby was a girl, they would say, oh, you're so pretty, you're so cute. So it's like from the get-go, you're kind of, even if you're cognizant of it and trying to not think of it like that, the value is different. Like you're more valuable if you're pretty when you're a girl, and you're more valuable when you're confident when you're a boy. And that's also put on people in their various gender expression. That's just that interesting little tidbit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I've even noticed that in my family, like nephews and nieces, I have to catch myself on saying things like buddy and cute. And it's amazing how ingrained it is in us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's not to say like we're all awful and we need to change. It's just, it's being aware of it is obviously the first kind of step towards checking yourself.
Absolutely. So do you see any areas of improvement in your industry that could be changed to better support women and other minority populations?
Good question. Well, I don't have kids myself. I am in a lot of women in trades groups, and a big issue for a lot of women is childcare, because in the trades, usually I start between 6:30 and 7, and a lot of times for women, the childcare doesn't necessarily open until later, or some people even work earlier. And so there is harder for women to kind of take on those roles because they just don't have the childcare. How are they going to go to work? I know that's an issue that doesn't affect me necessarily, but women in general. And I think we learned, especially in the pandemic, that women tend to take on more of the caretaking role and more of the household responsibilities, even if both partners aren't working, it seems like the women take more of the brunt of that workload and that kind of labor of caring after people. So that makes it hard as well to kind of keep up with the crazy hours of working in the trades. I can't speak for minorities, but I will say like there is obviously always improvement needed. And I think like I've worked with plenty of people, but it's hard when you are a minority, be it a woman or a person of color, because you, like I said before, you kind of become a representative of that community. So I think programs like Women in Trades or Aboriginals in Trades or, those targeted courses can help bring more people, and the more people that get brought into the trades to diversify, it only gets better.
Yeah, that's really great. So Women in Trade, and what was the other one you mentioned?
It's called Aboriginals in Trades, or at least Aboriginal it was, trade. I'm sure it's probably Indigenous in Trades. So I apologize if that's not the right verbiage. It's just when I was in school, that was what it was called. But yeah, it's targeted programs to certain demographics to increase the numbers in the trades. Because right now, I think women in trades is like 4% or something, and I don't have the Indigenous numbers, but I'm sure it's lower, much lower than the population.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that was a great resource to know about. What is your advice to women and other misogyny affected individuals coming into your field of work? And maybe this is, you could tackle this on the both electrician and the model experience, or if you want to stick with just the electrician, that's okay as well.
I mean, yeah, I think the biggest thing for me, and this is probably not the most correct, but the best way for me to deal with microaggressions or discrimination or discriminatory language is humor, and using humor to teach lessons and not so heavy-handed with those lessons. Like, for example, if someone's like, oh, I gotta go do this gay job, I'm like, oh, homosexual job, that's exciting, like, can I watch? Like, I, you know, you make it, you call out in a way that's still funny, because I think a big part of why I love the trades is because it's so much fun sometimes, like the banter, just the random screaming, because why not? You're on a job site, it doesn't matter. Like the camaraderie. And so the ways that I have had a lot of success in dealing with discriminatory moments is the humor, because it brings it to their level and it's understandable, and it's also calling them out, which is in a funny way and that everyone can get on board with, and you're not seen as, unfortunately, like the feminist, the killjoy, which I am, but I like to be subtle about it.
Well, it's kind of like speaking their language.
Exactly.
It is like, you know, we've both worked on their work sites. It is kind of bantery, jokey, and it's like, it doesn't mean you can be sexist, racist, any homophobic, anything. But it means it is a language they understand.
Yeah.
So you're trying to prove a point.
Exactly.
The banter.
So dealing with discrimination, I mean, obviously there is levels to it. There's, I think, to say someone is sexist for or homophobic for saying that's gay is not the appropriate language. I think language is difficult, but people can always improve. And so calling out small things here and there with humor is really important, but obviously big things, like big deal things, need to be addressed in a different way, whether it's HR or whether it's, you know, confronting the person or going to a trusted supervisor. In my experience, I have been really lucky with really good bosses that I know I can trust. And even if I can't necessarily trust that boss, if I know someone on site that I can trust, I can always talk to them about some issue. Like I said, I'm lucky to not have had any huge issues before, but I've seen it. I've seen it where I was in a group of people and there was one Black girl and she wasn't wearing a mask, but so was, you know, John wasn't wearing a mask, Ryan wasn't wearing a mask, you know, all these people weren't wearing a mask, but the supervisor saw her and pointed her out and told her he was going to kick her off site for not wearing a mask. It's like, okay, but what about all these other guys that you just don't even notice?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's when it gets too much. And that's when you bring it up with the powers that be and tell them it's not okay. And I think as much as women, we want to stop discrimination, it's not really our jobs to. It is a lot on the men as well who are watching discrimination happen, or, you know, white people seeing it happen to people of color. Like, we have to be advocates for each other, and it's not the discriminated group, that it's not their job to fix it, it's everyone else's job to look after everyone else, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely, that's such a good point. And for things like that, that's a cultural thing, that's like a work cultural thing. And I think it's a great point about, like, yeah, we can do as much as we can, but at the end, like, yeah, going to HR is the right place to be. And yeah, I think that's a really great point to end on. Thank you so much, Lexi. I found this really interesting. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me and being on CITR today.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I could go for another hour.
I know, I need another one.
All right. We've been talking for half an hour. Thank you so much. It is a really important thing to talk about. So I'm glad that there's people out there who will want to listen.
This episode of Intersections is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program.
Thank you for listening to Intersections, presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective. Tune in again in 4 weeks to catch our next episode. We can always be reached at our email, genderempowerment@citr.ca, for comments, feedback, and topic ideas. music by Hero.
I'm Amy Goodson.